It is Wednesday, October 10th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, the United States offers to help with the investigation of a missing Saudi Arabian journalist who went missing after visiting the Saudi consulate in Istanbul.
There is speculation that he was removed very quickly after he went into the mission.
Hurricane Michael takes aim at the Florida Panhandle, and we continue our look at the struggle for gender equality in Hollywood. It's all ahead. The U.S. offered to help Wednesday in the investigation of the mysterious disappearance of a Saudi journalist last seen entering Riyadh's consulate in Istanbul, Turkey, a week ago. Vice President Mike Pence asked if Washington might dispatch FBI technicians if Saudi Arabia requested it, said, "I think the United States of America stands ready to assist in any way." Meanwhile, the Washington Post, citing two people with knowledge of the Turkish investigation into the disappearance of Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi, said a team of men that arrived in Istanbul from Saudi Arabia was waiting for him to enter the Saudi consulate October 2nd. They also said the investigation is widened to include the residence of the Saudi Consul General. The Turkish newspaper Sabah, with ties to Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan, published photos Wednesday purportedly showing a 15-member assassination squad allegedly sent by Riyadh to target the journalist. Saudi Arabia, which has agreed to allow Turkish investigators to search the consulate, maintains that Khashoggi left the building on his own soon after he arrived. The Post, citing a person familiar with the information, also said U.S. intelligence intercepted communications of Saudi officials discussing a plan to capture the journalist. The person said it's unclear whether Riyadh wanted to arrest and interrogate Khashoggi, a Post contributor, or kill him. There has been growing international concern over the case. President Donald Trump said he plans to discuss the matter with Saudi authorities. Heather Nauert is a State Department spokeswoman.
From the secretary on down, we have been engaged in this matter. This is something that we've been following. I understand that the president intends to speak with the Saudis, so I'm not going to get ahead of that conversation that the president may be having. In the secretary's statement, he said that we've seen conflicting reports about his status. We're not going to make any judgments about what had happened to him. The United States is certainly concerned about his whereabouts. Senior officials at the State Department have spoken with Saudi officials through diplomatic channels about the matter. We call on the government of Saudi Arabia to conduct a thorough and transparent investigation.
Meanwhile, Khashoggi's Turkish fiancé, writing in the Post, implored President Trump and First Lady Melania Trump to uncover what happened to him. Khashoggi, a critic of Saudi policies, had resided in the U.S. after fleeing his homeland a year ago, fearing retribution. Anthony Billingsley, senior Mideast lecturer at the University of New South Wales, tells International Edition's Victor Beatty he doubts Turkish authorities will find anything in the consulate to solve the mystery.
If the Saudis are willing to let foreign authorities into their diplomatic mission, it would mean that they're pretty confident there's nothing to be found there. So we have to assume that that Khashoggi was removed some time ago. There is speculation that he was removed very quickly after he went into the mission.
He's a very high-profile Saudi journalist. He's been seen on satellite television. He's written articles for the Washington Post. What would Saudi Arabia gain by his disappearance, either kidnapping or murder?
Well, I think it's clearly sending a message. And Mohammed bin Salman, the crown prince and the sort of main driver of all of this in Saudi Arabia, has been making very clear to anyone who wants to challenge him or to pursue any sort of liberalization that they won't get away with it. So we've seen women who promoted the right of women to drive, for example, subsequently being arrested because they dared stand up to demand change. Basically, the prince is saying, if there's going to be change, we will be the ones who will initiate it, and we will decide what change there will be. Khashoggi's been very public in his standing up to the regime and his criticism of aspects of bin Salman's activities. So it's a very, very strong message to anyone who wants to challenge the regime that they should think twice.
A longtime Middle East negotiator from the United States, Aaron David Miller, tweeted that by failing the Trump administration it's referring to call out the Crown Prince on anything, especially repression at home. It has emboldened him and given him a sense that he can do anything. What's your view?
Oh, I think that's absolutely correct. I think what's been going on in Yemen, for example, there's been criticism in the Congress, criticism internationally, but the administration has remained very quiet. They've made a few hints that things need to change, but they've basically given Bin Salman the free rein to do what he likes.
The head of the Human Rights Association, Gulseren Yoleri, said the Saudi consulate cannot absolve itself of responsibility for this incident by allowing its premises to be searched. He said it has to prove that Jamal Khashoggi was not oppressed at the consulate and that he left safely. So really, the onus is on the Saudi authorities to provide answers.
Oh, I think so. I think the Turks have probably got pretty strong evidence that something untoward has happened here. And the Saudis have to be able to demonstrate that nothing happened. Now, how they do that, I don't know, given that, you know, there is a hole in the CCTV footage, and how on earth do you prove this is going to be a very difficult one. But the Turks are clearly interested in applying a fair degree of pressure on them over it.
Meanwhile, Khashoggi's fiancé said it is up to Saudi Arabia to explain and prove how he exited the consulate, from where and when. She said she continues to believe he's alive, but she said her hope fades slowly with each passing day. Here are some of the top news stories that are trending. The United States says China's human rights abuses are increasing under President Xi Jinping. The United States condemns the Venezuelan government for its alleged involvement in the death of an opposition activist. Afghanistan's civilian death toll is rising, and the president of Taiwan vows to maintain the island's sovereignty and security. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the VOANews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
Scientists have measured the chemical compositions of 18 planetary systems that are as far as 456 light years away from us. The scientists compared the compositions of the exoplanets to that of our planet and determined that many of the elements found on the distant planets are not only present on Earth, but the proportions in the mix of chemicals are also similar to those found on Earth. Because of the vast distance of the planetary systems and how signals from active stars can overpower those from the planets, the scientists decided to focus on white dwarfs, or sun-like stars that have died. As a white dwarf cools, material from its former planets, asteroids, and comets are pulled in and sometimes forms a disk around the dead star. The incoming planetary material changes the white dwarf's spectroscopic signal, which allows for measurement of the former planet's chemical makeup. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, women voters will hold the key to the upcoming midterm elections. Hurricane Michael is closing in on the Florida Panhandle as weather forecasters warn residents of the southern U.S. state to be ready for the full impact of the potentially catastrophic storm. The National Hurricane Center said in its latest report Wednesday morning that Michael's maximum sustained winds were 230 kilometers per hour and that the storm was about 130 kilometers south-southwest of Panama City, Florida. Michael's outer bands were already soaking the Panhandle area as the center moved closer to its expected afternoon landfall. Michael threatens to become the most powerful hurricane on record to hit the Panhandle, which is in the northwestern part of Florida. Florida Governor Rick Scott spoke to the news media Wednesday morning about the threat posed by the hurricane.
This is the worst storm that our Florida Panhandle has seen in a century. Hurricane Michael is upon us. And now is the time to seek refuge. Hurricane Michael has already taken lives in Central America, and the eye of the storm will make landfall on Florida's Panhandle in just a few hours. We expect conditions across the panhandle to begin deteriorating rapidly. We have spent the past few days traveling the areas of the state that Michael will impact, warning people to evacuate. Now the storm is here, it is not safe to travel across the panhandle. If you are in a coastal area, do not leave your house. The time to evacuate in coastal areas has come and gone. Listen to local officials.
Scott said the destruction caused by the hurricane could be significant.
Along our coast, communities are going to see unimaginable devastation. Think about the devastation we've seen before with storms like Hurricane Irma. The Panhandle and Big Bend will see winds in excess of 145 miles per hour. Think about that, 145 miles per hour. Again, Hurricane Michael is forecast to be the most destructive storm to hit the Florida Panhandle in a century. The storm will bring torrential rain to most of the Panhandle and Big Bend, which means flooding will be a major issue. Expect to see 12 inches of rain in some areas of the Panhandle.
Kerry Mock, professor of geography at the University of South Carolina in Columbia, tells me about the projected impact of the approaching hurricane.
Okay, I'll agree with the National Hurricane Center. They predict a major hurricane at landfall, and right now, the way it looks like, you know, I can't really go against it. That's what generally the computer models say. Although, when any time a hurricane gets closer to land in the northern Gulf, there is maybe a more shallow continental shelf and all that, and maybe something will happen. Maybe some dry air will come in or something like that. Some of the upper-level winds are not perfect for intensification, but the hurricane has done a lot better the last day or a half or so overcoming that anyway. So,
does it seem as though it is will be directed at the Florida Panhandle?
Yes, Panama City pretty much is the target. So give or take left or right 50 miles, I would say. You know, generally for 2 days in advance, you want to at least say 50 miles either way. But generally, the steering currents, the weather patterns showing the steering currents are pretty clear-cut, and where it will go are completely different than Hurricane Florence, which kind of just hardly moved at all for several days.
Yeah, I have heard that Hurricane Florence, it did sort of hover around, where this is just, it's apparently just become apparent in the last, I think, a couple of days, that how strong this particular hurricane is.
Yes, it did have some really warm water to feed on, and there's a lot of warm waters through a deep ocean depth where it formed over off Belize and in the Caribbean. It's not as ideal in the Gulf, but it's done very well so far. It's pretty much enhanced also. I think it will move pretty fast, so it can still stay pretty strong even when it moves inland a little bit.
Well, I have spent some time over the years in Destin, Florida, and I know that area, there it seems to be regularly hit, unfortunately, with hurricanes.
They get hit quite a bit, although they don't get very many major hurricanes. So if this does hit as a major, that would be pretty unusual, especially in October.
Now, you have been doing research on an earlier, much earlier hurricane that took place in 1852. Tell us about that hurricane and what you found out about it.
Okay, that one, I was interested in that, mostly more interested for South Carolina purposes, because South Carolina in 1852 got hit by that hurricane and also by a big hurricane that went from Mobile and caused a lot of flooding. They had three big Hurricane Florence type of events that same year. But it turns out that hurricane, the October one that hit October 9th in northern Florida, has almost an identical track as what essentially this current one's going to do. Who knows, it might be the same thing. It was probably a high Category 2 hurricane, maybe a Category 3, but we didn't have barometers right near the hurricane center and all that back then to prove it.
I so often feel sorry for people of earlier days just because they didn't have all the preparation and communications that we have now. At least people now can be prepared.
Yeah, over there was a lot of damage to the plantations and a lot of crop-type damage and things like that. Although nowadays, you know, something was massively strong, you know, going to a really heavily urban area, Tallahassee or Panama City, that for that matter. You know, it could be catastrophic, though. So it's pretty rare that the center of a real strong major hurricane goes through a very, you know, dense city in the U.S.
Yeah, Tallahassee is not on the water, but I have seen projections that it could get hit pretty hard.
And the thing about that also, I think they're really concerned about the winds, because there's a lot of trees over there, and if the trees get uprooted widespread, that could be pretty bad.
Carrie Mock, professor of geography at the University of South Carolina. In less than a month, American voters will go to the polls in midterm elections to fill all 435 seats in the U.S. House of Representatives and one-third of the 100-member Senate. The stakes this year are especially high since polls show the opposition Democrats could win a majority in the House, an outcome that would make it more difficult for President Donald Trump and his Republican Party to pass their conservative legislative agenda. The battle to win the House will depend on who wins the many swing districts across the country, where surveys show women voters, especially better educated white women, may hold the key to victory. VOA's Carolyn Pursuti went to a suburban New Jersey swing district where she spoke with women voters.
Women, white and educated. Experts say they hold the key to this year's midterms.
Can I have a small beet salad to go, please?
Lynn Fedeli is a New Jersey high school teacher who holds a master's degree. She voted for a third-party candidate in the presidential election, but will vote Democrat in the midterms.
I do believe government can do a lot to help with housing inequality and education and environmental protection, and should be doing so much more.
For her part, Chris Elliott says she will stay Republican for the midterms because of the immigration issue, even though she now regrets voting for Trump in 2016.
I'm an immigrant, and I had to come over here legally, and I had to pay to get all my documents. So that illegal alien, I'm not for that.
For small business owners like Kate Smith, who typically votes independent, it's all about the economy.
I think I would come down on issues around financial, fiscal responsibility, curbing some government programs, regulatory.
Pew research dating back to 1992 shows women lean more toward the Democratic Party than men. In the last presidential race, 54% voted for Democrat Hillary Clinton. But a slim majority of white women, 52%, voted for Republican Donald Trump. Analysts say the Democratic Party strategy is to woo back those female voters with candidates who have no political experience.
You're seeing people with unique skill sets, business people, doctors and scientists, that might attract a constituency that is different than a kind of stereotypical liberal woman candidate.
And so my grandma,
like Democrat Mikey Sherrill, the former Navy pilot is running in a district that hasn't elected a Democrat in 36 years. To help, she brought in a crowd pleaser.
I love you, Joe!
Former Vice President Joe Biden.
She understands what duty means. She gets it.
From what we've seen, just, you know, as far as who comes to our rallies and throws fundraisers, the women's vote certainly is a key vote here.
Hey, Ann, Jay Weber, it's about 2:30.
Republican Jay Weber is her rival. Weber campaigns on his experience as a state assemblyman.
When it comes to fighting for New Jersey, no one does a better
job. His political ad seems to be aimed at women by featuring his wife and seven children. He has also mobilized a group called Women for Weber.
It seems to me that women want, in many ways, what men want, which is a thriving economy.
The nation's gross domestic product has grown an average of nearly 3% in each quarter since President Trump took office. But the question is whether the strong economy will be enough to keep this district in Republican hands. Major polls show Weber and Sherrill in a tight race. Carolyn Pursuti, VOA News in New Jersey's 11th District.
This is VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia, debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. That's Encounter, every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC, and our 5-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
This is International Edition. Since the Me Too and Time's Up movements began, many films have offered more nuanced and textured female characters and are telling more women's stories. But activists say more needs to be done to increase women's equitable treatment in Hollywood. In this installment, VOA's Penelope Pulu talks with activists, filmmakers, and actresses about the legal and behind-the-cameras groundwork that will empower women in the film industry.
Wonder Woman. A Wrinkle in Time.
Oh, what have you done to me? You vengeful bitches!
The Beguiled. These are just some of the recent films by women about women. They have been multiplying since the advent of the hashtag MeToo movement that is highlighting pervasive sexism and sexual abuse. George Mason University professor Lisa Koch says women are uniting in large numbers and raising a lot of money to fund the movement.
It started with 300 women in Hollywood. It has expanded dramatically, so 700,000 female farm laborers pledged their support, and that's just one example of many across the spectrum. Within the first 60 days, it raised $21 million in financial backing.
In Hollywood, influential female directors and actresses are speaking out on behalf of abused women across the socioeconomic spectrum. One of them is Oscar winner Jane Fonda, who testified to Congress on behalf of domestic workers and farm workers about their rights.
If we are going to truly confront and solve these issues of workers' rights and dignity and safety from sexual harassment in the workplace, and those economic and sexual issues are very much interconnected, we were going to have to stand in kinship and love and alliance with our sisters across sectors.
Activist and filmmaker Shannon Lee says female producers and behind-the-scenes artists are offering women more jobs, equal pay, and expanded creative expression.
Someone like Ava DuVernay, who, you know, has an artist collective that distributes films, she, you know, mandates that all the directors are females.
However, Lee cautions, the sexism against women in the workplace is too pervasive to change overnight.
Where there is an imbalance of power, there is an abuse of power.
18% of those involved in film production as directors, producers, writers, cinematographers, editors, 18% are women.
Both women say the goal for the industry is 50-50 by 2020. Thousands have come to the National Women's Law Center in Washington, D.C. to seek legal help to fight sexual harassment and discrimination. Legal director Sunu Chandi says both the hashtag MeToo movement, where women openly address abuse, and the hashtag Time's Up movement, where sexual predators and abusers, such as Bill Cosby, are being prosecuted and convicted, are significant legal steps in helping to establish gender equity in Hollywood and elsewhere.
Hiring women into roles that are traditionally male roles is absolutely something that we are pushing for.
Chandi says although progress is being made in offering women the legal help and support they deserve, there is still much more to be done to bring real change in the workplace, be it a factory, a farm, or a Hollywood movie set.
Action!
Penelope Pulu, VOA News, Washington.
And that is our show. Please visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.